So thank you. I hope I know how to turn this on. This was a difficulty. It is on. Very good. So again, this is a report on work done in Valdivia with Gomberov and on Wilczek. I tried in the first lecture to motivate the effect that we are discussing by showing that it arose even in two-dimensional space-time in a way that to us was a bit surprising and strange, and it was one of these magical things of general relativity. One process, one and the same process, looked as seen from one frame of reference as a purely quantum process, a tunneling process, and as seen from an accelerated frame, which is just, one would think, a change of coordinates, it looked as a classical, statistical, thermodynamical process. And by some kind of general relativity magic, although the concepts were all very different, the final formulas were the same, and the probability in particular was the same. Although, again, in one case, the probability was a tunneling probability. In the other case, it was a classical metastability decay rate. The process in question was a process, was an example. I don't think I'm using this thing, I guess. It was an example of, in a simplified context, of a mechanism for the decay of the cosmological constant, which is perhaps one of the central problems of theoretical physics, and which we hope that among all the promises made over the years by string theorists will be solved by them. But in the meantime, we keep doing this in the semi-classical approximation to gravity, standard gravity, which will, in any case, be included in, or is included in, a more complete theory. Now, today, I'd like to take you through the, a bit through the minefield of this. In the first lecture, I mostly spoke. So now we'll do some work. The setup is the following. We consider a mechanism for a decay of the energy of the vacuum associated with the cosmological term by a cascade of events, each event being the formation of a membrane which divides space in two regions, the outside and the inside, and which is endowed with an intrinsic charge associated with the gauge invariance of a three-form gauge field. The jump, the quantity which jumps, is the, actually the inverse, is the square root of the cosmological constant. And we will go quickly through the equations. The basic Lagrangian, which will be written later on, is just the sum of three terms. One is the Hilbert action with a bare cosmological constant taken to be negative. Then there is the Lagrangian of this three-form field, which is the usual Maxwell-type Lagrangian, which will contribute to the Hamiltonian with a positive energy density, which is proportional to the square of this electric-like field. And then there is a membrane, which is brought in here as a fundamental object, which has its own Lagrangian, which is just the ordinary Lagrangian for the area swept by the membrane in space-time, and this membrane is minimally coupled to the free-form gauge field. So the variables in the problem are the gravitational field. We will take a spherically symmetric configuration. So this is the line element. The general form on shell of the field strength of the free form is with an E which is independent of space and time. That follows from the equations of motion. And this is the motivation for introducing it, because it's on shell, then the field is a constant and it contributes with a constant energy density to the system. Then there is the membrane taken to be spherically symmetric, so it is described in parametric form by these equations. This is the line element on the membrane. This is the condition that the parameter is the proper time. Or the, all these equations, as you see, are Euclidean, because all the work will be done in the Euclidean sector, because that's what we use to compute the probability with the thermal on. Now, the thermal on will be reintroduced in a moment, but it's a static solution of the equations of motion. So in particular, the equation for the membrane in the case of the thermal on is very simple. This function of tau is just a constant. The membrane divides space in two regions, and this one has to be extremely careful to do it well, because otherwise one makes serious mistakes easily. The region, one has to establish a convention and keep it for the orientation of the membrane. The conventions are written here. The solution, first of all, before I go into that, the general solution for the line element on each side of the membrane will be of the de Sitter form, because we are assuming that the overall cosmological term is positive, that it was very, very large at the beginning of the universe, of the order of 10 to 120 Planck units, and now is of the order of 1 at present. So in particular, this means that to be consistent with observations, the amount of the jump must be also of very small, of order 10 to the minus 120, to be able to account for the present value without fine-tuning. So on each side of the membrane, we have a Schwarzschild de Sitter solution. The Euclidean version of the Schwarzschild de Sitter solution is, we only look at the RT coordinates. It's a sphere topologically. Not quite a sphere, because we will see in a moment that one of the poles will be omitted. So it's a sphere minus a point, but we will call it loosely a sphere for the moment. And the time runs around like the longitude on the Earth, and the radius runs from one of the poles to the other. Each of the two poles in the Euclidean sector is what is left of the horizons of the Lorentzian sector. There is one which is the memory of the cosmological horizon that we would call R with a double index, plus plus, for example. And then there is the black hole horizon at a smaller value of R, which we will call with one index. The value of the mass of the Schwarzschild black hole is different inside and outside of the membrane, and the value of the radius of the universe, L plus, well, L is also different. We use the subscript plus for the outside or the exterior or initial. All these are synonymous in this problem. So that's important to remember. Exterior and initial are synonymous, and we'll see why. And then minus is the interior of the membrane, also what will be the final state. Now, for this one needs specific conventions, and one must be careful to keep them, so they are defined here. This time, which goes around like longitude, we will define it in the way which is written there. That's the direction. It could be chosen the opposite, but once it is chosen, one should keep it consistently. And also the parameter, tau, will be kept as increasing when one travels along the curve. Then with increasing tau, the interior is on the exterior is on the right. I guess that's what it says. I always get these backwards. Well, it's what says there in any case. Now this, to finish with the fundamental equations, there are two equations which are the fundamental equations of the problem and which follow from Gauss's law for the membrane. This is the jump in the field strength across the membrane, and Q is the quantum of charge of the membrane, which enters as a fundamental constant in the Lagrangian. And then there is this gravitational equation, which technically comes from integrating the energy momentum tensor across the membrane, but which physically or morally it has the content of the conservation of energy. So for the membrane, or it may be sought off by the same reason as the first integral of the equations of motion for the membrane. This comes from Einstein's equations. If one differentiates it with respect to time, once one gets the equation of motion for the membrane, which is an example of the very old feature of general relativity of getting field equations from Einstein's equations. So those are the basic equations that we deal with. I need to give you some more technology before we can talk physics. How did one do this? Ah. There's one equation which I should, well, yes. The equation of motion for the membrane, which I just mentioned that, or the first integral of the equation of motion for the membrane that was written in the previous transparency, one can work it out with a bit of algebra and write it in this way, in which it is expressed as an equation for the change of mass in the black hole. Delta M is the final mass. M means final. The reason that M means final and plus means initial is that the membrane, once formed, will always move, leaving the minus side behind. So, and then it will tend to fill the space, so what is left behind will be the final product, because the final product will be the interior. So that's why final is the same as interior, because the membrane moves on changing the world and leaving the new world behind. So this then is the change in mass, the mass after the effect before the mass, minus the mass before the effect, and then there is some algebra, and one obtains this formula. Now, in the Euclidean region, in Euclidean time, all these equations are written in Euclidean time, the motion of the membrane oscillates, is oscillatory. In Lorentzian time, because the circular functions become hyperbolic functions, it doesn't oscillate, but it expands forever or contracts forever. But since these are Euclidean equations, the motion oscillates, and it oscillates between two turning points. This is the general motion of the a generic membrane, which is described by this equation. Now, the turning points of the oscillation are those at which the time derivative is zero, and therefore, at the turning points, we set r dot equals zero in this equation, and we obtain the equation marked with an asterisk, which is the most important equation for us. This equation, one can imagine fixing all the initial parameters, which means fixing all the parameters with a subscript plus, because plus is the initial state. So we can imagine fixing the initial mass, the initial cosmological constant, and then after the effect, or in the inside of the membrane, there will be a new mass, which is the original mass which was given, plus this delta m. There will be a new cosmological term that jumped in the way we described before by a unit of the fundamental charge. And so this formula will give the increase in mass or the change in mass in terms of the original quantities and the parameters in the action. This formula can be nicely drawn on a graph, which I hope to have. This is fun, this machine. I never saw one like this before. Anyway, it's either you or me, I guess. So let's make it bigger. There. All right. So this gives the change in mass as a function of the radius at the turning point, namely as a function of the radius at the moment when the membrane pops out of the vacuum. It pops out of the vacuum at rest with a radius r, big r. This is the radius. And that's the change in mass for the plus parameters fixed, as it says there. Now, if you observe this graph, this is a very interesting graph, and we were a bit surprised when we first found it, but it's a good graph. If you look at it, it has obviously four distinguished points. These are the points at which the tangent is horizontal, and these are the points at which the tangent is vertical. Those are the important points in the graph. For a generic value of delta m, which is the integration constant in the energy equation, the motion oscillates between the two extrema. You see that there are two points, one up here and one down here, for which the two extrema coincide, and so the membrane has nowhere to go because the maximum radius is equal to the minimum, so it just stays there. That was, to be frank, unexpected to us. It's quite all right to say to be frank because it was really an observation of Frank Wilczek. So we were stubbornly trying to find instantons. We found them. They were messy. There is some paper in the archives on that. They're messy. They are these things. They move, you know, that's why they're messy, because they move. But then there was some stupid solution that did not move, and to which, against which I fought for half a year, because it did not move. But this one is the one, because it corresponds in the analogy with a potential. Well, I'll just say, in the one-dimensional case, you remember there was a potential, which is the easiest context for this, with a minimum, then with a maximum. This is the real physical potential, and then going down. So the minimum is here, the maximum is here, and the instantons are ways in which the particle can tunnel through the energy barrier and go to the other side. This will be this kind of solution of the equations. But then there is this other solution, which is just a metastable state, which is sitting at the top of the hill, and which is unstable, because it's at the top. If you kick it slightly, it will go to whichever side you kick it from, I mean, the opposite. So you kick it that way, it falls down in. And that's not of no use, because if it falls down in, it goes back inside, which is what we're trying to change. But the other half of the time will go out and will change the world. So, and half is plenty. So we have two such solutions, which are static solutions of the Euclidean equations of motion, and which are, one has the name cosmological thermalon, for reasons that will be clear, hopefully, in a moment. The other one is called black hole thermalon, and is the one sitting down here. Now, I have to make one important precision here. If you remember this drawing that I was doing with the hands, where there is the hill, the potential hill, and the particle on top, that's the Lorentzian potential. If you put it in imaginary time, it flips, and so what used to be the maximum is the minimum, and there is a frequency of oscillation in Euclidean time. And this frequency is, this Euclidean frequency is real, because the thing is the minimum of the potential, of the Euclidean potential. Now, although this is not a potential graph, it has to do with energy anyway, because there is energy, or the change in mass, in the vertical axis. So it looks at first sight, and this worried us, as if this one of these two solutions would have a real frequency of oscillation, and the other an imaginary one, because one of these things looks like a maximum of something, and this looks like the minimum of something. Now, the fascinating thing is that both are real, and this means that both are, in the potential analogy, are unstable solutions of the Lorentzian equations, and ultimately, the reason is a deep reason. The reason is that as we will see in the next graph, and I mentioned in the previous lecture, from the point of view of the black hole, who looks at the cosmological horizon, the mass of the system is the negative of the mass of the system when the roles of the observer and the observed are interchanged. And that's why this can manage to be in both cases a minimum of the associated Euclidean potential. Now, we then have two solutions, which is, are these two thermalons, and the recipe which I should have given at the beginning, but I did not give, is that one has to glue the two the Sitter space, Euclidean the Sitter spaces. How much time do I have left? I started late, I don't. Good. Very good. Thank you. So this is the geometry of the solution. What is drawn here is two pieces in each of the three examples, is two pieces of a Schwarzschild de Sitter space with Euclidean signature, which are matched according to the field equations and the appropriate discontinuities on the membrane, which is drawn here. We will be interested at the end, of course, in calculating the probability, and the probability will be given in the semi-classical regime by the familiar expression of some slowly varying coefficient times the exponential of the Euclidean action divided by h bar. So we will be in a moment interested in calculating the action for these configurations, which I will comment upon in a moment. When one calculates the action, and I did mention this at the end of the previous talk, or the first talk, one, of course, has to be careful, as with everything. And in particular, the action must be appropriate for the problem at hand, which means that the action must have an extremum, a strict extremum, not an extremum up to surface terms. There's nothing called an extremum up to something. It's either an extremum or it's not an extremum. This has caused enormous confusion over the years with people dropping surface terms, and other people have made a living out of surface terms. I will not mention that. Anyway, there is one action principle which is appropriate, for example, for this figure here, which I will explain first. We will explain the one in the middle at the very end. This figure corresponds to the matching following the rules that were given in the previous transparency, being careful about what is inside and what is outside and so on. And this is determined by the range of the parameters. With some range of the parameters, one obtains this solution here, where one retains a piece. Well, no, one retains a piece of Schwarzschild the sitter, which includes the cosmological horizon. You see, there is a double subscript there. It's R minus minus, meaning that this piece is the interior, is the minus side, and in this case, it so happens due to the values of the parameters appropriate for this solution, that the interior, which is kept in, contains a cosmological horizon, and then jumps across the membrane to another solution with slightly different parameters, which contains a black hole horizon, R plus. So the reason that we call this plus is that because this is the original space, this is minus because this is the final space. The reason that there is a cosmological horizon here and the black hole horizon here is not some capricious choice. It follows, if one analyzes the mass graph, from a given range in the parameters. Now, it's well known and usually considered a difficulty that in a matching like this, even without the membrane, this would be just Schwarzschild de Sitter space with one given value of the mass everywhere and one given value of the cosmological constant everywhere. Even then, without the membrane, it's well known that if one tries to avoid a cusp, a conical cusp at the origin or at the cosmological horizon, one will end up with a cusp at the black hole horizon or vice versa. Now, the presence of a cusp is a violation of the field equations. It's not an aesthetical thing that one doesn't like to have a cusp, because Einstein's equations for a manifold imply, without sources, that there are no cusps. So this is not added on the equations. So whenever there is a cusp without a source, there is a violation of the field equations and then a violation of the action principle, and that's why one often doesn't like cusps. Except if one removes a point, and then one doesn't require the field equations to hold at that point. That's a natural thing to do in this case, and even more than natural, it's mandatory, because one needs a place where one will specify the parameters. If one has a problem or a solution with an initial mass m plus, an initial value l plus of the cosmological radius, when writing the action principle, one has to implement this. And then one has to say, I hold things fixed somewhere. So we need a point where we hold things fixed. At points where things are fixed, the equations of motion don't hold, because since the things are fixed, you cannot vary them and you cannot implement that the action be an extremum. So it's just fine. And because we are interested in a solution which will be driven by the thermal properties of the cosmological horizon, we don't want the cusp to be at the cosmological horizon, because we want the cosmological horizon to be dynamical and to be doing its work. But we don't care about the black hole horizon, because the black hole horizon, we will use it as the analog of, if you like, of infinity. It's where somebody sits and tells you with a little book, this is the mass. So this is why, in this case, for the cosmological thermalon, we have this little circle, means that the black hole horizon is removed from the manifold. And so this is a perfect bona fide solution of the field equations for this problem. It's an extremum, and it's the correct solution to use to calculate the probability. Now, there is the counterpart, which is this other one. This other one is a solution which is governed or driven by the thermal properties of the black hole horizon. And therefore, everything is reversed. Then we remove the cosmological horizon. And that's also fine. This is one of the, these are the two solutions. Now, you may ask, who is this character here in the middle? And this is fun. It's known that there is a special value of the parameters in the Schwarzschild de Sitter space where the cosmological horizon and the black hole horizon coincide. Naively, that means that there is nothing left because the radius goes from the black hole radius to the cosmological radius, and then if you make them coincide, apparently the solution is gone. But that is a coordinate artifact, and the solution does exist, and it's not gone anywhere. It's there, and it's called, it's a famous and very nice solution called the Narai solution. In the Narai solution, what happens with our work, and the way it comes in into this problem, is that when one starts moving the parameters and one starts approaching this critical value at which the two horizons coincide, what was called the inside, according to the rules, becomes the outside and vice versa, and something flips. And therefore, the gluing becomes very different. When one goes over this threshold, then the gluing is a very funny one. It contains still the same black hole horizon here with a point removed. At that, I mean, with that point removed. But then the interior of the Schwarzschild de Sitter space to be glued on as a minus side is the other piece. It's not the piece that was used here which had the cosmological horizon, but is rather the piece which has the black hole horizon in it. And that's not my fault. It's just follow the equations. So, and this has fun consequences. So one has this apparently looking strange case where the solution has two black hole horizons. One without a cusp in the interior and one with a cusp just as before. And we still call this a cosmological thermalon, although if you look carefully, there is no cosmological horizon in it. And of course, after a certain age, one likes these strange things. And this is very useful. What happens geometrically here, if you like, is the following. The radius of the two spheres, for example here, the radius of the two spheres starts from a minimum value, which is the black hole radius, increases, jumps a little. It doesn't jump, I'm sorry, the radius of the sphere is continuous across the membrane. So it goes on increasing and reaches the maximum value R minus minus. So you see the problem has four dimensions. This is a graph in RT space. At each point, there is a two sphere attached with radius R. And that radius of the two sphere with angles theta and phi increases continuously from the minimum value to the maximum. Here, it does the same in the opposite way. But here, It increases, reaches the membrane, and then decreases again, which is funny, but that is, well, it is. So that is what was written there. Now, please. No, not really. No, it's not intermediate between the two different cases. Maybe if you allow me to go on, I can come back to it, because there is a graph which will. Yes. Oh. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. I'll go ahead. I had postponed the transparency. The point is the following. Thank you for asking that. I'm being sloppy. That's really the main point. The point is that this membrane will pop out of the vacuum. I am talking about the cosmological thermalon. So you would have initially the Sitter space. Then the so no black hole. That's the case one likes. That's the simplest case, and indeed the one to a first approximation, the interesting one. Then the membrane pops out, and it will, with the right identification of what's the interior and what's the exterior and so on, it will decrease the cosmological constant for values of R larger than the radius of the membrane. So it's what you would normally call the outside, but it's not the outside. In this case, it's the interior, which is on the other side. And then it will contract, because it will move, leaving behind the final state. And after it contracts, it will form a black hole. So even if you didn't want to have it, the membrane will produce it for you. So you might as well put it in. Right. So, and indeed, one can calculate. One starts, this is just some horrible equation. And you know, the Tullio Reggi used to say that there are no numbers like 8, 9 in physics, but I'm afraid. What can I do? Yes, one would come to Tullio with something and then show this work, and he says that it's wrong. There are never numbers like this. But we checked it. So anyway, we start with the even value L plus before the decay, set M plus equal to 0, no black hole, and then take the formula, look for the mass after the decay. And it's given by this expression. One can calculate it, where x is this thing of abominable appearance, and gamma is this some other thing here. But the key point is that you can find, this is the formula for something which is a very interesting effect. It's the formula for the mass and the radius of a black hole formed by the decay of the Sitter space through this mechanism. So the net effect is to reduce a little bit the cosmological constant and get some concentrated mass, which to us is very nice. Seven minutes? Good. So let me now talk about the probability. The probability for all these types of problems is given by that formula. For some psychological reason, we keep calling we path integrate over e to the plus the action. So for that reason, the probability, which is written as this prefactor times the exponential of minus b over h bar, this b is minus the action. I am emphasizing this because in a plot you will see a negative action later on. So this is the probability. This is actually the rate, is the probability per unit of space-time volume. So it has units of a length to the minus 4. And in the case of the Sitter space, for example, since the initial space being the Sitter, so the decay of pure the Sitter space, it applies strictly as the probability per unit of volume, because the space is as symmetric and homogeneous as you can imagine. When there is already one black hole present somewhere, you see, after the first time the process happens, there will be one black hole somewhere already. So then it will not be exactly the Sitter space. But if the black hole is small and is in Andromeda or somewhere, you use the formula for the down here and nobody will notice. This has to do now with entropy and or, as, if you like, with phase space densities. The action is the sum of three terms. It's most useful, although not the only way. And if Gary Gibbons had not driven back to England, he would, of course, say that this is not the good way of doing this. But unfortunately, he left. We have this discussion over the years, but it's fun. This is the right way of doing it. It has no subtractions, no regularizations, just comes out. So one takes the action in Hamiltonian form. The action in Hamiltonian form has a bulk piece, as it's called nowadays. This bulk piece for a solution which is static has the value 0, because it has p q dot is 0, minus the constraints, or the constraints are 0 on shell. So that is 0. And there is no banana subtraction to make anywhere. So that's that piece. One has to add, however, something instead of subtracting, which is 1/4 of the area. One adds 1/4 of the area of the black of the horizon, because only by adding 1/4 of the area, the equations of motion, when one varies the size of the horizon, will give you the absence of a conical singularity. So for the case of the thermalon, where we kept smooth the cosmological horizon, we need to add 1/4 of the area of the cosmological horizon. This is added here, 1/4 of the minus minus area. And then, as in all these calculations, one has to subtract. This has nothing to do with the subtractions I was not attacking, but commenting upon before. This is just the formula. One has to subtract the action of the background. So one has to subtract the action in the absence of the membrane. The action in the absence of the membrane is 1/4 of the A of R plus plus. So this is the net difference in available phase space, if you like, between the initial and the final states. This mu is the tension of the membrane, and this is the volume of the world history, standard term. So that's the action of the membrane. And this business here, alpha squared, is the value of the charge of the membrane times the average of the electric field inside and outside. This is the minimal coupling term rewritten using Stokes' formula. And because it was taken half the interior plus half of the exterior, I just don't want to go into the details. This already involves, in the way it is written, the subtraction similar to this one of the background. And of course, there is no background subtraction here because one would have to subtract the same expression with mu set equal to zero. And so, again, this is below the threshold, and this is above the threshold. Because you see that there is R minus, because in the above the threshold, one has a black hole horizon. Below the threshold, one has a cosmological horizon. And there we already see part of the answer to, I think, your question. You can see that the action is perfectly continuous across the threshold, because at the threshold, R minus minus is equal to R minus. So crossing the threshold, although the picture changes dramatically, the equations don't scream. It's just perfectly smooth. It's not violent at all. And then one can see that more clearly. Oh, we had to use a machine, as one would say in the old days, because the equations are not amenable to direct treatment by a human being. So for some choice of the parameters, this is a graph of the action. You see, it's negative because of what I explained before. So the probability is e to the plus I. And this is the form of the action for the decay of originally empty De Sitter space. So m plus is zero. And we start from a given L plus and start increasing L plus, because L plus is the inverse of the square root of the cosmological constant. So as the process goes on, L plus increases from a very small value corresponding to a very high cosmological term, which is put as zero in this graph, to a very large value corresponding to a small cosmological term. There is some value here called L nari, which can be calculated algebraically, and the machine just goes through. There's nothing noticeable. And then there is a value called L infinity, at which L takes the value infinity, which means that the cosmological constant vanishes. But then you can keep going. And it goes. It means what it says there. Yes. This has built in something that we don't really understand well, but which can at least, if you one wants to be careful, because you see the process keeps happening. The process does not stop with the thermal on as it stops with the instanton. We did not find a way to stop it. And so it will jump. You remember there are two contributions. One is negative and then one is positive. It gives to the point when it's zero, because then the positive exactly Yes. There is a negative, then there is the positive one, which is bigger than the, in size than the negative, this positive one starts decreasing, because that's what we want, because we want to approach the total value to zero. But then since the process doesn't stop, the positive piece keeps decreasing, and there is a negative effect, which it's interesting, but I don't know exactly what it means. And then I am done, except for one transparency. One should not totally hide beneath the equations. So one should ask about the actual universe. I was discussing this once with Belinsky, and I made the mistake of saying, what about the actual universe? And then he said, forget the universe. And this, and I wrote that on my blackboard. I thought this was an extreme theoretician. I liked him. So it's written, it's been written for 2 years with the date, forget about the universe. This is Russian theoretician, you see. But I am not, cannot do it. Or I do it most of the time. So in the actual universe, in Planck units, the cosmological term is very, very small. It's 10 to the minus 120. The age of the universe, I am told, is 10 to the 60. And so we ask, is there any way, very roughly, that this process could, if perhaps, maybe, account for the fact that these numbers have this value now, and both of them had value 1 at the beginning, or near the beginning. One can do some elementary calculations. Of course, it's more very likely that this process is of importance only very early on, and then it slows down for other reasons. But if we assume that it's going on all the time, we use 10 to the 60 as available time in the history of the universe, one can calculate the number of events that you need to do this. It's calculated there. And so one concludes that this factor a e to the minus b must be between these two bounds. Now, there are some additional things to be considered, which is that b cannot be too small, because otherwise the semi-classical approximation breaks down. And this number alpha squared, which appears in the action, is fixed by the value of the jump, because it should be consistent with the value observed now. And if one analyzes this, interestingly enough, it's not clear at the brutal level what the answer is. It needs a careful analysis of the prefactor, which one normally takes to disregard to a first approximation. Here, the prefactor is what will have the end of the story. And that's why also we're interested in the two-dimensional example, because there one can calculate the prefactors exactly. Of course, the problem is not physical then, but one can get a handle on it. The prefactors is where this omegas and this that we mentioned the other time, the frequency of the negative mode comes in. It's important to have only one negative mode. Much to my own regret, my collaborators are finding 7 negative modes, which, as Reggie would say, cannot be right. But I conclude simply by saying that this is a process which reduces the cosmological term, at the same time produces localized matter in the form of black holes. And if the prefactor were to work out right, it could be a way of approaching the solution to two different problems at once, namely to the absence of the cosmological term and to the presence of structure in the universe. If not, it doesn't do all the job that one would like to do. Thank you.
Any questions or comments?
Because, much to our regret, the process which is present in 1 plus 1 is the analog of the black hole thermalon and not the cosmological thermalon. So we don't have the analog of the process I was describing. So if that's what you do, because it's the one that's not of interest for us. That's.
Any further questions? Well, if not, let's thank Claudio again for his wonderful lectures.
Well, being the last victim, I, according to tradition, I have the privilege of expressing the thanks of all the speakers for the magnificent hospitality, for the magnificent country, although I don't know if that's due to them, but in part it is, because you do things like this, which are so happy and useful. So I will name the organizers, but I will name them with a Spanish pronunciation, because otherwise. So I, the local characters, Carlos Herdeiro, Miguel Costa, Nuno Sousa, Lisboa gets harder, Zé Murao, João Pimentel Nunes, Ricardo Schiappa, is that in Italian, I guess? Orfeu Bertolami, Conceição Bento, Roberto Spotting from Algarve, and our famous José Edelstein. I don't know where to say that he's from. But at least in part, he's a Valdivian nowadays. But really, and without any intention of offending the people I have just named, I'm sure all our biggest thanks go to Alex for keeping always a smile on her face in spite of our actions. So, thank you very much.
So I should say that in closing and on behalf of the organizing committee, we would like to thank you all for coming, especially the speakers, but all the participants. And we do hope that you've enjoyed both scientifically and otherwise this meeting that we've had here. We would also like to thank Alexandra very much. She seems to be absent for some reason. But in any case, another applause to her wouldn't be too much. We hope you will not think that all that Portuguese people do is party throughout the night and honk the horns and hammer each other on the head. you came here in a very special occasion, not only because of the popular festivities, but also because of the European Cup of football. And that has brought a lot of color and life to our country. And we do hope that has helped to make it a memorable occasion. So thank you.